spring thaw. Leek's teeth hurt him. The National Health Service was slow to replace them, and so he wore the cracked bridge only when he was outdoors, keeping his mouth clenched shut because the dentures slipped free any time he spoke. At home, he did without and sloped about the house with the overbite of a cartoon turtle. When he saw Shuggy, he sat on him and pinched his skin till it came out in welts. Shuggy felt it was owed and did his best not to cry out. When the NHS finally replaced the false teeth, Leek's bite struck the top set at an odd angle, and the ceramic plate pinched at the back and brought his gum out in raw sores. Like an apostle, Shuggy followed him with slices of white bread. He tore off a small hunk, balled it to a pillowy mush, and handed it to Leek to put under the ceramic and soothe the blisters. Shuggy carried bread in his pocket for Leek up until the summer. Many times, when Agnes washed his school trousers, she would find a forgotten slice of pan loaf, stiff and blue with mould. It turned to the summer holidays, and the road was hoaching with McAvenny children and their cousins' cousins. They were making the most of the 2 weeks of good West Coast weather, bouncing footballs off curbs or riding bikes and screaming as they sent great mouse-coloured clouds of slag dust into the air. Shuggy wilted away from them. He felt something was wrong. Something inside him felt put together incorrectly. It was like they could all see it, but he was the only one who could not say what it was. It was just different, and so it was just wrong. He loped into the shadows of the house and clambered under the chain-link fence, out into the peat marshes that ringed the scheme. He walked away from the council houses a good while. The rare sun beat down on his back and through his thick jumper. His skin started to feel prickly from the heat. Turning off the flattened path, he crushed a new road through the tall reeds. He stomped around in circles until he trampled a large oval section completely flat. The dead grass made a thick brown carpet. Shuggy slipped off the heavy wellies and began to practice, as Leek had shown him. He stood at one edge of the circle and walked to the other side. The first crossing was a quick, nipped walk, short, sharp steps with swinging arms. In frustration, he dug his clean fingernails into the palms of his hands and turned around and started again. He took slower, more deliberate steps, made room for his cock, swung his feet out and pressed each heel firmly into the soft earth. Shuggy took off the wool jumper and wiped the sweat from his forehead. He scolded himself, turned around and did it again. He did this back and forth all afternoon, each time willing himself to go slower, to stop swinging his arms so expressively, and to be more like Leek, like a real boy. It came so naturally to those boys, without any thought, without any apology. Agnes sat upright in the chair by the window and watched the street. Packs of wains roamed at play, but Shuggy was not amongst them. At 10:30, her house and her makeup were already done. And although she wasn't leaving the house, she put on her low-cut jumper and a fitted grey skirt. She sat drinking the dregs of old lager and wondering where exactly her boy was hiding from his childhood. From boredom, she picked white flecks of sock ooze off the arm of the chair. She made a neat pile in a square of toilet paper and then folded it and put it in her pocket. It made her sore that she was still paying for this old three-piece suite and her boys wouldn't respect it. She would bleed £5 a week for the next 8 years to pay for it. And they sat on her upside down and sideways, shoes off and shoes on. The broken gate across the street opened, and she sat up. The ragged bunch of McAvennies began wheeling salvage bikes out into the dust. They were beautiful children, she had to admit. The slovenly ways of their mother made them look like little wild lions. Their long hair was thick and animal-like, and their eyes, the beautiful gypsy brown of their father's. She had taken the middle girl once. She hadn't intended to, but she had been washing the windows in vinegar water, and she couldn't concentrate. The children had been playing in the street, in the dip of the road where the stour collected. She couldn't enjoy cleaning her windows while watching them sat in the filth there. She beckoned the one they called Dirty Mouse over and lured her around the back of the house by giving her half of an apple. For an hour or so, she ran a hard-backed brush through the wild tangles of the girl's hair and carefully cut the knots and dreadlocks from the nape of her neck. When she was done, Agnes was surprised to see how straight it was, how shiny and silken, the colour of caramel and tabby cats. Together, they did it up in a neat ponytail, then in braids, in French knots, and then in big French plaits like the ones Catherine used to wear to school. It was a lovely afternoon. Colleen had done the nut when she found out. She was screaming at the top of her lungs before she had even left her house. She crossed the road like a coming storm and rapped hard on Agnes's door, screaming,
"Who in the name do you think you are, parading round here like you are the big I am? You should focus yourself on that poofy wee boy of yours."
Then there was wild spitting, but Agnes, numbed with lager, didn't blink an eye. She turned the hard brush over and patted it reassuringly against her leg. "Keep it up," she thought, "and you'll see how well I can use the back of a brush as well." Some days, not many, Agnes thought it was a shame they could not be civil. There was so much the women held in common, although Agnes would have bitten off her own tongue before she admitted it. Agnes had heard from Jinty that there was a time when Big Jamesy had spent the last of his redundancy on junked cars and BB guns for the boys. It had sent Colleen out to steal their Christmas dinner from the Fine Fair supermarket. They both knew the keen edge of neat. The women could have been closer then. Separately, they had both gazed hungrily at the pages of the Freemans and lain awake in the quiet of the night wondering how to make a pittance stretch around. If he got this and she got that, then what would they themselves do without? It was a mother's math. Separately, the two women had spent whole afternoons hiding behind settees from the Provident Man. It was like an odd synchronized swimming, the way the pithead women all sank to the carpet and crawled across the floor. The Provy was a thin man in a big suit. He would peer through windows unabashedly. He had spent years watching curling fingers of cigarette smoke billow inexplicably from behind the settees in empty houses. Colleen, indirectly through Bridie, had even taught Agnes how to trick the electric meter, how to open the box with a hairpin without damage to the lock. One Sunday every month, she reclaimed her coins, and her boys sat eating runny ice cream sandwiches in front of a roaring hot 3-bar electric fire. Silver coins sat in her hand like a pile of jewels, and Agnes would pump some of the coins back through and get double the month's electric allowance. The meter man's books never added up. Agnes could picture him down the pub with a man from the Provident, wringing their hands at the industrious mothers of Pithead. As Colleen clutched Dirty Mouse to her chest, Agnes wondered why Colleen hated her so much. Agnes coveted what Colleen had. She was thick with family. They were close, and they were close by. Her children were young and strong and still needed her. Most important of all, she had her man, her only ever man, and he was still there. She also had her God, and by her own account, he had chosen her to be superior, to bear moral witness in those around her. And she did, like a middle manager carrying out the big boss's bidding. To Colleen, Diddling and shoplifting were one thing, necessary sins. Black tights and high heels were altogether more mortal. As Agnes finished her lager, she watched the wild McAvenny's bicycle towards the pit road. She watched Colleen come out her gate with her message bag and follow their plumes of dust out of the scheme. It was then she took a notion. Colleen's man, Big Jamesy, was under a rusted Cortina shell. He was dirty already, or dirty still, Agnes could not tell. With a sharp clip-clip, she crossed the narrow road. He lay flat on his back, a stain of dark oil spilt around him like a pool of treacle. Agnes wrapped her big ring on the metal car shell.
"What's it now?"
His sigh was so gruff that she felt the heat of it on her ankles. Metal tools fell to the concrete, and the man did a crab-like shuffle to get out from under the wreck. It seemed to take him forever. Her face practiced a series of uneasy, casual-looking smiles. By the time he found his feet, he stood a good 2 heads taller than her. He was the colour of the Black Irish, so honey that the dirt and oil almost suited him. The side of his neck was burnt and puckered from the pit explosion, his hairline at the back oddly asymmetrical. Still, he was handsome. She hated that.
"Is your Colleen home?" she asked.
Jamesy eyed her wearily. His eyes stopped on her low V-neck jumper.
"Don't try and kid a kidder," he said flatly. "What is it you want?"
Agnes dropped her eyes. His hands were thick and calloused.
"I had a favour to ask you."
"Oh, aye."
Now he smiled like all the men she had known. His sharp teeth pointed inwards into the back of his throat like a trap.
"I'm at my wit's end," she said. "I'm having a bit of bother with my boy, the wee one."
His face was stone again. His eyes were on her body.
"Aye, he's no right. You're gonna have to watch that one. Always has too much to say for himself. I saw him skipping a rope the other day. You'll be wanting to nip that in the bud."
"That's why I'm here."
Agnes folded her arms, but he kept his eyes on her chest.
"Do you want me to get my boys to give him a slap?"
"No."
"Just a wee tap. Toughen him up."
"No. It's not his fault. It's hard growing up without a man around."
"What about your leak?"
The filthy man considered his own question for a moment. The way his lip curled sourly said he thought little of her eldest boy.
"So, what the fuck do you want from me then?"
The wind blew out of her.
"I just see you doing all these lovely things with your boys."
There was no pity in the man. His hardness, even with his own, was legendary on the scheme.
"Aye? And what do you want me to do about it?"
"I thought if I gave you a couple of pounds, maybe you could take him with you the next time you went fishing, or maybe teach him how to kick a ball."
The tight movements of his face told her he was considering it.
"Agnes, I'm no wanting your money."
Agnes felt like a fool. She wanted to get back to a drink, to douse her anger and embarrassment with it.
"Right. Of course. I'm sorry I bothered you. I just thought..." "Never mind."
She stiffened her spine, ready to walk her shame back across the road.
"Hold on. I'm no saying there's nothing you can do for me."
Big Jamesy smiled then, and his teeth looked sharp as knives. He pushed an oily hand up his manky vest. He ran it across the meat of his belly. The smell of grease and motor oil stayed with her for a long time after. His cock had been considerably darker than his body, like it was grimy or, she hoped,
like it had grown tough and discoloured from overuse. It was dark like the thigh meat of a chicken, and it struck her as odd that it was not as honeyed as the rest of him. Jamesy was still turgid as he re-zipped his fly and pulled Agnes back to her feet. It was over so fast, and he ushered her out of Colleen's house all sleeked and shameful. He acted like a sore loser, like a customer who regretted a purchase but couldn't return it to the shop. He grumbled that he would pick her boy up that Sunday, that he would take Shuggy fishing at a canal that was clogged with garbage and fresh pike. At first, Shuggy had recoiled and looked like he had never heard a worse idea. She had cried in the bath later that night, trying to dig the oil out from her skin and feeling like a fool. Shuggy had heard her there, sat in the cold water, crying to herself. She had been mostly sober, and to him it was different from the drunken poor me's. He resolved to show an interest in the fishing, anything to make her happy again. He fixated on the planning of the day, the organising, the list making and the list checking. He planned the lunch and the clothes, the things he would put in his school bag, and the little things he would put in each pocket. Tomato sandwiches, a toy robot for sharing, a little plasticky pair of sunglasses, and a Christmas cracker whistle. When he had laid out all the preparations and put everything neatly in its place, he sat on the edge of his bed like a patient little dog. After Sunday breakfast, the house across the street started to come to life. The long-limbed McAvenny boys burst out the door and started loading bags and rods into the back of their father's scrap lorry. Francis carried an old plaster bucket full of maggots and heaved it over the side. Agnes heard the noise and came around the corner into his bedroom. She made an excited face to the sweating, plastic-wrapped boy.
"See? I told you."
She sounded more relieved than he was. Shuggy kept his eyes on the truck across the street. He touched each of the cagoule pockets in turn, like the father during Mass.
"I'm going to catch you the biggest fish ever." "I know you will," said Agnes, smacking her lips. Should I go across the street now?" he asked.
Agnes thought about it for a moment. Then the pride in her answered.
"No, you wait here. Mr. McAvenny will come to you."
Big Jamesy stepped out into the road.
"Shall I go out now?" asked Shuggy again.
Leek had been trying to sleep the morning away. A week of manual labour made him look forward to a long lie. He had been listening to them dither and let out a muffled scream from under his bedsheets.
"Yes, for God's sake, go!"
Agnes swatted at the lump of leek.
"No, I said Mr. McAvenny will come to us."
She watched the dark man take wide steps down the path. With a thick foot, he kicked loose car parts back under the cortina, which was mounted on bricks. She rubbed the side of her thumb raw as he moved some of the bags in the back of the truck, securing them under cords, and then he passed behind the truck and stepped out into the road. Shuggy was wringing his hands in anticipation. She fixed the neck on his cagoule.
"Listen, you mind and be a good boy for Mr. McAvenny. Do as he tells you. Try not to be a burden, all right?"
She kissed him on his small, hot mouth. There was a bead of sweat on his top lip. The hillock of Leek's bedsheets spoke again.
"Don't drown, fuckwit. I'd never get over it."
There was a sound of the old lorry engine starting. It took them both by surprise. They saw the beast rise and lurch as a handbrake was released. With a look in the wing mirror, Big Jamesy pulled it out onto the road. Panic cracked across the boy's face. The truck had been facing the wrong way, towards the end of the road instead of its mouth. The end of the road was a dead end, stumped in by the reedy marshland. It widened like the head of a spoon, and cars often had no choice but to continue up to the very end of the spoon to turn and come back out. Agnes bit her lip. I think he's just turning the truck around. She tried to believe it. But maybe let's go wait at the door. The boy nodded, his face red hot. They stood behind the front door and adjusted themselves, as though they were making a grand entrance on the stage. Holding hands, they stepped out and went and stood by the edge of the road. In the distance, the green lorry had turned and was rumbling back. They stood on the curb, erect and proud, as other people might stand on a grand train platform. She held his hand, and with his free hand, he held out the soggy tomato sandwiches. Agnes fluttered her ringed fingers. Right. Dry your face and mind what I said. The truck didn't slow. Big Jamesy didn't even look down on them. The soot dust whipped into the air as a truck chugged past. They stood for a long time, watching it recede. When the dust settled, there was a rapping sound, a high chink-chink from the window opposite. Colleen McAvaney lifted the stubborn sash and leaned out into the street, a look of suspicion on her face.
What are the pair of you standing there all glaikit for?
Agnes could only smile, as if the bus she had run for and missed was not the bus she had wanted. Her dentures were gleaming white in her red mouth, stour already sticking to the fresh paint on her lips. Her boy sat in the coal bunker at the back of the house, flicking the warm tomato out of his sandwiches. He hadn't cried like she had expected him to. Agnes had burst the electric meter and emptied it of all its shiny coins. With that, she had gone up to Dolan's shop and bought a handful of chocolate bars and a small fish fillet. When she handed him the little fish fillet, he hadn't gurgled with laughter like she had hoped he would. He just wiped the soot dust from his hot face and shrugged his shoulders.
I didn't want to go anyway.
There were tears of frustration on her cheeks as she said she was sorry. He looked up at her and asked,
Why? I'm sorry you have a prick for a father.
Leek, under duress, kicked a ball in the back garden with Shuggy. Agnes watched them from the window, and it was clear neither of them wanted to be there. She found some cans of special brew hidden under the sink. She rolled the cold bronze in her hand and thought about calling forth the demons inside her. If she drank to get drunk, then she would be fighting in the street before the end of the day. She sat on the edge of the clean settee with a can of courage and hissed it open. Colleen brought her rubbish bin in from the roadside, stopping to gossip with a housewife who lived on the left of her. She was twisting her crucifix in a girlish way. Agnes could tell she was feeling pleased with herself. All morning, women flitted around Jamesy's disemboweled cortina. Agnes could tell they were feeling social, because they all waddled quickly, in that clenched-arsed way they got when they were anticipating good gossip. Bridie Donnelly picked the leggings out of her crotch. It made Agnes feel better to look at their dirty skirts and tea-coloured tights, at their baggy leggings and house coats. Agnes was strategic in drinking the lager. She wanted to time it for Big Jamesy to be home before she swung through that rusted gate. She wanted him to watch as she told Colleen what he had done to her with his oily fingers. If her blood rose and drank too early, she would peak, her mind would slow, and she would slur as she spat the truth. Agnes was feeling the first flush of the drink when a strange woman came along the road. The woman was checking an address on a piece of paper, counting the identical houses as she passed. It was easy to tell she wasn't from the pit because her hair had been expensively cut and set. She wasn't a Catholic cousin, because she had a bright red handbag, and it matched perfectly her bright red shoes. The flash across Colleen's face told Agnes she didn't know this woman either. The woman approached the group, said something to Colleen, and Colleen nodded slowly. Stubbing out her fag, she picked up her cold mug of tea, and looking backwards over her shoulder, she led the stranger inside. The gossiping crows scattered. Agnes sat forward. She thought the woman must have been the social work, and she wished she had called them herself. They were cracking down in Pithead, catching the dole dodgers who were working part-time and the disability claimants who were up ladders wiring in television aerials. But the woman didn't stay long enough for that. She left with a beautiful red bag still under her arm. Agnes watched her step through car guts and close the broken gate politely. She took a pair of expensive-looking sunglasses from her bag and used them to push her hair from her face. It tickled Agnes, for she knew it would make Colleen livid. Sunglasses? Who in the name of the Holy Father does that bitch think she is? With her head held high, the neat woman walked up the empty street and out of view. Agnes waited, but Colleen never came out again. When they were hungry, the three McAvenny girls floated up the street like ghostly brides. Their golden hair was matted and blown about their faces like a veil, and their long summer dresses, once a delicate blue, were washed out with age. Agnes had only closed her eyes a moment, but when she looked up, the bulk of Big James's scrap truck was mounted on the curb opposite. It was still daylight outside, but the big lights were already burning in the McAvenny house. In the bare bulb light, she could see people moving quickly from room to room. Agnes hissed open another can and gulped it down quickly. In the bedroom, she changed her skirt for something that would let her kick, and donned the Angora jumper with the rhinestone beads, the impractically fluffy one that Colleen had been so suspicious of. She took some time going through her box of jewels, picking the largest gemmed rings, which were papal in scale. The glass gems were so poorly set, they ripped tights and caught on tea towels. Some mornings, after a bad bender, she woke up to find cuts in the side of her face or the inside of her forearms. Agnes looked at her bejeweled hands, a sparkling weaponry, knuckle dusters of peeling plated gold. The last of the lager curdled in her empty stomach, and she knew the time was now. Agnes stumbled outside and leaned on the broken fence. She took a deep breath and felt a little lightheaded and a little discouraged again. Then the screaming started. The McAvenny's door flew open, and the youngest boy started running at full tilt out into the scheme. With the door open, Colleen's voice rang clear across the low houses.
James Francis McAvenny, you're no better than a proddy dog carrying on like that.
Agnes stood stock still in the middle of the empty road. Up and down the street, children stopped playing and windows quietly opened a narrow crack. She knew women were turning down televisions and twitching behind curtains.
Eh? Aye. Go on then. Hit us. You think you're a big man around here, don't you? I'm going to get my brothers round here and we'll see who is a big man now, eh? I should have listened to my mammy, you dirty orange fucker.
A man's voice said something sharp but inaudible, and Colleen shrieked louder.
I will not keep my voice down. You've broken your vows, and God will never forg...
Agnes imagined Big Jamesy must have taken her by the throat, because the street fell silent for a moment. Then Colleen's voice wavered back, this time with less anger.
Where do you think you are going, James? To her?
Big Jamesy McAvenny burst from the house, the neck of his t-shirt ripped as if Colleen had been hanging from it. He was still dressed in his waders, and he had a black bin bag full of what looked like clothes and bedsheets tight in each hand. There were sore stripes of red sunburn and fresh claw marks across his face and burnt-up neck. He climbed up into his truck and started the engine. Agnes was swaying in the middle of the road, He couldn't have missed seeing her there, drunk but proud, with her clenched, gemmed fists. He rolled down the window of the truck with a furious pump and shouted at her like a frustrated man looking for directions.
"Where the fuck do you want her?"
He used it as though it were her name.
"Come to pick the fucking bones clean. You're a bit quick, aren't you? You're supposed to let the meat cool first."
With that, the truck roared away. By the time he had reached the end of the street and turned, Colleen was at the front door, looking wild.
"James! Jamesy!"
Agnes stumbled back to the curb, clumsy with drink. Jamesy swerved deliberately and narrowly missed clipping her with a back tyre. The road filled with the usual cloud of soot. Agnes was blinking on the opposite curb, but Colleen hadn't the peace of mind to see her. In her thin face was a wildness and an emptiness, alive and dead at the same time. She fell with a crack to the tarmac and lay, loose-legged and blank-faced, in the dust. Agnes looked up and down the street like a person who wanted to stick the boot in sleekily, or a person who wanted to run away from a car crash. She was unsure which. There was a faint breeze fluttering all the curtains, but no one came to help. No cousins, no other pit women. Silhouetted at the McAvenny window stood the four remaining children, lined up in descending heights like little Russian dolls, all with the same sad, beautiful face. One day, she would give them all a deep hot bath to really stick it to Colleen. From the gutter, there was a loud rip, rip noise of hair being pulled from an old brush. A sticky, tugging sound, like old gummy linoleum being torn up. Agnes stepped closer to the flailing woman, the belly full of flat lager. The dust and the tangle of limbs made it hard for her to understand what she was seeing. At first, she thought Colleen was ripping her football top into shreds. But as she stepped closer, Agnes could see the clumps of matted hair the woman was ripping free in each claw. Rip. Rip. It came out in wild handfuls. Agnes flitted around the fallen woman. Before she knew it, she was kneeling in the dirt, using her ringed fingers to try to tame the younger woman's furious talons. She wrapped herself tightly around Colleen.
"Here, what's all this then?"
She said it in a voice so kind it shocked even her. She hadn't come to help. Colleen went limp in her arms, and Agnes gently lowered the woman's claws into her lap. Agnes prized open the fists, which were still clutching the ripped-out hair. She began pulling the thick strands from between the thin fingers, as if she were cleaning an old comb. Colleen's hollow eyes stared into the dirt for a long time before she spoke.
"I should have left Will alone instead of getting on at him while he was down. All I said was I didn't want any more mouths to feed."
Colleen's hands were shaken.
"Since that mine shut, he was coming at me night and day like a teenager on the boil. He was never any use at all, that pulling out nonsense."
Agnes was staring at the bald patches on Colleen's head. There was already dust on the blood-pricked scabs.
"Five wains is enough for any woman,"
Colleen snorted.
"He would have had 100 if he could. I just thought, fuck you, McAvenny. And despite him, I shut the shop."
Colleen started to cry again. The tears came out in long, thick streams, almost as if she had a leak. They poured down her bony nose, dripping off her chin. Colleen turned her eyes towards Agnes and looked at her then as if for the first time.
"That must be when he started fucking around."
Agnes was conflicted. She would have told any other woman that it would get better in time, even though she knew it would sit on her chest for the rest of her life. She offered no such salve to Colleen. It occurred to her that they were equals now, and she couldn't be ashamed at how her insides lifted at the thin woman's bad news. She bit her lip to stop from smirking. miners' women, were pacing in the street now, cousins and the wives of cousins, circling nervously, as if Colleen had turned into an animal they were unsure of how to approach.
She walked up to me as nice as you like, with these sunglasses, big fancy ones in two shades of brown. She said her name was Elaine. Asked if she could have a word in private. I thought she was from the catalogue. Thought she was trying to sell me some shite for the Wayne's Christmas.
Colleen then let out a groan. She uncurled her fingers and took the hem of her skirt. With a single tug, she split the thin fabric in two from hem to belly. Then she fell listlessly back to the pavement.
For the love of God!
Agnes grabbed at the shredded fabric for modesty.
Colleen had no underwear on. The frizzy hair of her cunt was shocking against the sallow smoothness of her belly. We've got to get you in the house. Up. Up!
Agnes tried to lift her, but she was too uncoordinated with a drink. They toppled over together into the stour, and Agnes tore the skin off one of her knees. She tried to drag Colleen inside, but the wasted woman, nothing but a pile of bones, slackened all her muscles and slid back into the dirt like an unruly child. Agnes stood over her, sweating and spitting.
You can't lie here like that.
With her eyes closed, Colleen moved her hand across the dirty pavement like she was caressing fine sheets. The words came out slower and thicker now.
I don't fucking care. Let James A. McAvenny hear that his wife died on the road with her old cunt out.
There was nervous laughter from some of the Waynes on banks. Agnes gave Colleen a hard shake. She found she enjoyed it, so she did it again.
Madam, have you no pride?
Colleen's eyes opened wide and then closed. Her breath grew lighter. Agnes pinched her.
Here, what's gone into you? What have you taken?
But the soft pile of bones did not answer. The fences were hung full of women squawking like big nosy crows. The news had spread fast. Colleen's cousins were screaming blue murder, and Jamesy's sisters were throwing their fists in defence of his good name. Jamesy's mother, 80 if she was a day, was spitting and swinging a balding mop like it was a scythe. Not knowing what else to do, Agnes drew off her tights and then her own knickers from beneath her skirt. She did it with a brass neck, stumbling half-cut, right there in the street. She struggled to put them on Colleen. It was like dressing a life-size dolly whose limbs, instead of being stiff and rigid, were limp and heavy with slow blood. By the time the ambulance came, Colleen wasn't talking anymore. Agnes sank to the dust beside her. She regarded her expensive white underwear, luminous with good bleach. They hung on the thinner woman like a lacy nappy. And they were, Agnes thought, more kindness than she deserved.
Chapter 15. He reminded her of the colour of sausage casing. Except it was less of a colour, more of a watery tint that has been spread too thin. He looked worn through. Lizzie had to use both of her hands to cradle one of his, and as she laid her cheek on it, she could feel the raised cobalt veins that traced the top of it. These were hands that had loaded grain trucks for 20 years, hands that had laid pungent tarmac adam, hands that had killed Italians in North Africa. Now Willie was having trouble even breathing. The air in his lungs sounded as if it was being run over a grater. It would catch in the prongs and stop, only to rattle and rasp back out of him. Lizzie wiped at his face with a hanky she kept up her sleeve. His mouth was always open now, the corners caked and dry. She wanted to kiss him once more. She wanted some last memory of the fine man that he had been, that he still was.
The old men in the other beds were dozing. She had watched the nurses give them all a drop of liquid morphine, and now they looked like they slept an uneasy sleep. Lizzie unbuttoned her coat and drew the scarf off from around her hair. She lifted Willie's hand and drew down the bed sheets. At first she thought to climb in beside him, lie against the stone wall of his body, and cry. Instead, as she mounted the hospital bed, she had a change in her heart. She clambered onto the bed and then, still in her good coat, she straddled him. Anyone else might have missed it, but Lizzie was sure she saw the lids of his eyes flutter, the corners of his mouth pull tight in a cheeky smile. She rocked back and forth gently. It wasn't meant to be as dirty as it looked. She only wanted to feel him pressed against her, warm and alive through the cotton of his pajamas, through the clammy poly blend of her underwear. She only wanted to give him a little comfort against the pain. Didn't she owe him that? Lizzie lit a fresh cigarette as she rocked and rubbed on top of Willie. She took a deep lungful and then leaned over and blew it into his face. She could only imagine how much he would be missing his regals.
"Are you all right, Miss Campbell?"
asked a voice from behind her. There were hands gently but firmly holding her elbows.
"It's all right now, darling,"
the voice said as it guided her off the bed.
"It's all right, my wee China."
Willie didn't stir as the sister helped Lizzie down. His pajamas were wrinkled where Lizzie had creased them. Otherwise, nothing had changed. Without any judgment, the nurse snuffed the doubt in Lizzie's fingertips and pulled her skirt back below her knees. Lizzie felt herself guided back to her seat, and she felt the cold glass of water at her lips. The whole time the sister soothed her in a gentle, calming voice. She petted her like a cat, and it made Lizzie want to tell her secret things. Lizzie took the sister's hands in her own and said,
"Please, God, don't take him away. Please. No again."
Agnes's face was very thickly made up, and it looked to Shuggy like the paint had been layered over several other faces she had forgotten to take off first. The boy followed her at a discreet distance, stopping now and then to gather up things that fell from the pocket of her matted mink coat. As Agnes stoated through the infirmary's automatic doors, a concerned nurse ran over, thinking she was in need of attention. Shuggy watched the girl try to corral his mother and slip her gently into a tatty wheelchair. Agnes pushed past the nurse and went in the direction of the oncology wards. Shuggy heard the nurse say to a male attendant that she thought for sure Agnes was a working girl.
"She is not," said Shuggy, quite proudly. "My mother has never worked a day in her life. She's far too good looking for that."
The matted mink coat gave her an air of superiority, and her black strappy heels clacked out a slurred beat on the long marble hallway. The rubber tip had worn away from around the right heel, and although she had coloured the shoe in with an old black bingo marker, the sharp metal nails scraped the floor with the screech of hard times. Gaunt faces looked out from white beds as she scratched her way past. A large, friendly-looking sister came out of a booth and stepped directly into her path, a green clipboard clutched to her chest like a shield. She was as wide as a small wall.
"Excuse me, can I help you?"
said the nurse with a tired smile.
"I'm Sister Meehan."
She pulled at the official-looking badge on her blue uniform. To Agnes, she seemed kinder than the nurses Lizzie had worked with years before. Great hulking Glasgow women able to hold grown men down on a Saturday night and pull broken bottles from between their ribs. They had granite faces, cold and hard,
from watching the endless soap opera of mindless violence. Sister Meechan was clearly trying her best. Agnes looked down at the stocky nurse and looked at her small badge. The letters were moving. She took a deep breath and tried to sound sober.
No thanks. I know where. I'm going.
Sister Meechan didn't break her well-trained smile.
Do I? It's the back of 9. Visiting's done for the day.
With a heavy blink, Agnes drew her eyes over the officious woman. The end of her nose was pitted like a small strawberry. Agnes let her eyes linger and tutted in sympathy for it, letting the sister know she had clocked it. Then she put her ringed fingers on the nurse's thick arm in an entitled way, each finger falling onto her flesh as if she were playing scales at the piano.
I'm here to see my father.
Agnes's breath was yeasty and sour on the nurse's face.
And what is your father's name?
Said the sister without flinching. Glasgow routinely presented her with all sorts.
Well, William Campbell.
The nurse made to check the name on her green clipboard, but stopped.
Ugh, I see.
Her practiced face cracked, and underneath, several real emotions played across it. She hugged the clipboard to her broad chest and took her free hand and placed it gently on Agnes's arm. Agnes found herself staring at it.
Ah, Hen,
she said tenderly, breaking all the formality of her training.
I'm dead sorry for the state of your daddy. He's one of our favourites. Such a big, handsome bastard. And he's no been a single bit of bother.
Then Sister Meechan stepped closer to Agnes and added conspiratorially,
I am worried about your wee mammy, though. She doesn't seem to be coping all that well. The night I was making sure all the supper things had been tidied away, but when I reached your father's bed and noticed the privacy curtain was still half drawn, you ken it was far too late for that. So I pumped back the privacy curtain to find the poor soul atop of him giving it pure laldy.
Shuggy would have said that the nurse was a kind lady. Agnes would have to disagree. If she had been sober, she might not have laughed. If the kind nurse didn't have her hand on her arm and that pitiful look in her face, she might not have laughed. However, she wasn't sober, and she wasn't in the mood to be condescended to. So she laughed. It came at first as a guilty giggle, but then it caught her with a shake, and she threw her head back in gaudy, haughty peals of laughter. Then she said cruelly, Were you jealous? Sister Meechan's fleshy jaws smacked together.
Dear God!
The strawberry nose twitched.
Do I need to remind you that this is a communal ward?
Shuggy saw his mother's fists tighten.
Oh, give me a break.
Agnes dropped her jaw, her eyes still bright with laughter. She leaned in close.
After nearly 47 years together, that poor woman is mad with the grief.
She extended a mink arm and pushed past the broad sister as easily as drawing curtains back from a window. She clipped up the corridor to the door of the ward. As she turned, the bare nail made a shameful scrape on the floor. And my daddy is one fine-looking man. Shuggy watched from the shadows and waited for his mother to push through the big swing doors into the ward. He came up silently behind the sister, who was standing slack-mouthed and staring in the direction of the scraping heels. He was sure the sister was feeling sorrier for the old woman with the dying husband, for now she also had a bad drunk for a daughter. Shuggy poked her fleshy arm, and she jumped at the silent visitor by her side.
I'm sorry, he said, much like it was a calling card. Please forgive her abruptness. She really is a good person.
Then he added,
So, is this where people come to get to heaven?
Sister Meechan clutched her hand to her heart from the fright.
The boy in the fitted suit was standing very close to her. He clasped his hands behind his back, like he was an old man, like he was the head of the hospital himself. She wanted to touch him back. She wanted to see if he was real.
Ugh, son, you can't be sneaking up on folk like that.
I take care where I walk. I don't sneak.
He straightened his narrow tie.
Can you please answer my question?
The sister blinked.
Heaven? I suppose so. Sometimes.
Shuggy chewed his lip.
So can they go to hell from here too?
She could have told him it depended on the shift, that most people admitted to the ward in an old farm game day should probably go straight to hell. She looked him up and down. The boy couldn't be more than 8 or 9.
No, son. Not too often, she lied.
With curious fingers, he started to stroke the metal watch chain that hung from her pocket.
Do they leave in a bus for heaven?
A patronizing smirk crossed her lips, and she reached out a scrubbed hand to pat him on the head. He ducked instinctively and tutted,
Please don't do that. I just had it parted.
With a sullen look, he came closer again and resumed twisting the interlocking links. Sister Meehan's hand wavered awkwardly in the air, unaccustomed to not being in command.
You're a very tidy little boy. My mother says it doesn't cost anything to take pride in your appearance.
With a glance down the hallway, she asked,
So is that woman your mammy?
Shuggy nodded.
Uh-huh.
He looped the chain around his fingers and stole a glance up at her kind face.
It's okay, though. You don't have to like her. Sometimes she drinks from underneath the kitchen sink. Nobody really likes her then. Not my daddy, or my big sister, or my big brother. But that's okay. Leek doesn't like anyone, really. Mammy says he's a social spastic.
Sister Meehan closed her eyes, the clear grey eyes that had seen all manner of sins and sights.
Does she do that often?
She asked. Shuggy dropped the chain. He looked up at her through his knitted brows.
I can manage. I can fetch messages and make sure she goes to bed on time. Besides, Sister Nurse, you never answered my question. My mother told me that my granddaddy would be going to heaven soon, and I wanted to know if he had to get a bus or if we could take him in a black hackney.
The sister's hand moved from her heart to her throat.
Ugh, son, it doesn't really work like that. They don't leave in a bus. I mean, sometimes they go in a big black car.
She started worrying a tab of neck skin, twisting at it as though it were a necklace.
But when a person goes to heaven, they don't take their bodies with them.
Shuggy stuck his bottom lip out in thought. His right eye closed in sour disbelief.
Do they not take their hearts? No. Do they not take their eyes? Well, no. Do they not even take their fingers? No, son. They don't take their legs, or their arms, or their noses. They don't take anything, because it's not their bodies that go to God. It's their spirit.
Shuggy looked relieved somehow. The nurse could see a weight shift on his shoulders. He turned on his polished heels and followed the perfumed cloud of Agnes down the corridor. He stopped at the double doors.
So if your body doesn't go to heaven, it doesn't matter if another boy did something bad to it in a bin shed, right?
The door to the communal ward had swung open with a slam. The lights were low and drowsy. Beige men sat propped up in white beds. On the far side of the ward, Willie's bed was ringed with orange visitors' chairs. Each of the empty chairs had a lonely pool of reflected light, and Lizzie sat alone, her grey coat, grey skirt and tan tights fading away against the bright plastic. Agnes threw her hands over her face in a wide arc of grief, something like a grotesque peekaboo. Backlit by the bright corridor light, she performed like she were on stage at the King's. She crossed the ward and let her bag and coat slip off and lie behind her in a trail across the floor. In defiance of Sister Meekin, she put an open-toed sandal on the bed rail and climbed up on the bed. Lizzie looked down at the foot on the bed, heartsick at the painted toes bursting through the worn black tights. Agnes mounted the bed and draped herself over her sleeping father like his widow. Then she began to hug him and wail like his mistress. Willie didn't stir. Lizzie rose from the chair and, without a word, pulled her daughter's black skirt back down over her white nylon petticoat. The ward door opened a thin crack, and Shuggy appeared, carrying a handful of her belongings.
"You'd lose your head if it wasn't screwed on."
The dying men stirred again at the apparition of youth. A visiting lady in a lamb's wool twin set folded her arms across her chest. She pointed her suede driving moccasin towards him in disapproval. The suited boy walked across the floor and silently gathered more of his mother's things, dragging the discarded coat behind him like a wet towel. His granny was smiling at him. It was a smile she had when she was watching Sunday telly and not paying much attention. She didn't look sad at all, Shuggy thought. She looked peaceful, resigned. He sat on one of the empty chairs next to her and held her thin hand as they watched Agnes stumble down off the bed. In the dim light, his grandfather looked the colour of condensed milk. His skin looked thin, like yellow flypaper, and was pulled so tight and thin over the bony Campbell nose it put Shuggy in mind of a chicken's wishbone. Agnes sat in the other seat next to her mother and took her free hand. Lizzie said,
"Visiting hours are over."
Agnes's head bobbed in her shoulders.
"Mammy, this is hard for me. I just couldn't get up the courage to come." "Aye, well, you look plenty full of it now." "I just finished what I had in the house. As soon as it's all done, I'm going to get better. I'll even join the AA.
She was lying, and it rang hollow.
"I've never liked those AA places. They attract the lowest kind of people. God gave you a will. You should use it to save yourself."
For a good while, the three generations sat in silence, their hands laced together in a chain. Agnes's cheap stone rings were as big and blue as Lizzie's knuckles. Agnes took a length of toilet paper out from up her jumper sleeve, wiped her eyes, and then handed it to Lizzie, who did the same, and passed it to Shuggy, who folded it to a side free of mascara or phlegm. Agnes reached into her black bag and drew out two cans of lager. She popped them with a foamy hiss, dropping the pools neatly back into the bag.
"I don't think I can handle this. Are they all to leave me?"
Lizzie took the white toilet paper from Shuggy and modestly covered the half-naked pin-up on the side of the lager can.
"I feel like he's just back from that bastard in war. It's too soon for him to leave again."
Shuggy watched the lamb's wool woman twist her mouth in disgust at the open lager. He turned to tell his mother, but he could see Agnes wasn't there in the room with them. She hadn't even heard a word her mother had said. Shuggy straightened the buttons on the front of his granny's wool coat, turning all the plastic flowers the right way up, leaves at the bottom, the petals at the top. He waited as the women talked and talked and talked, and did not listen to each other. The old man lay in the bed, taking his shallow breaths. The air made a wheezing sound as it squeezed around the tumours in his lungs. Agnes clenched her jaw in anger so tightly that the porcelain dentures shrieked like two supper plates rubbing together. I should never have left with that bastard shuck. She lit two fresh cigarettes and handed one to her mother. I'll tell Daddy that when he wakes up, eh? It was this that brought Lizzie's mind into focus. Lizzie took a draw on her cigarette and blew it carefully into Willie's face. Your father is never going to get any better. Agnes patted the bed. Not my daddy. He'll be right as rain in a few days. Agnes, the doctors have said he's never going to get home again. Agnes took another drink from the can. Shuggy watched the layers of old mascara dissolve and black tears start to migrate down her face. Why do we have to just lie down and take everything in life? Lizzie shrugged. Oh, what good are the poor me's now? They were silent a good long time after that. It grew so late it became early. The lamb's wool woman eventually left, and shortly after, Sister Meehan brought them opaque mugs for the lager and cleared the offending lager cans. The nurse said nothing more, and Agnes knew then it must be getting close to the end. The sister gave Willie more morphine, gave Lizzie an ice cube for his lips, and then she pulled the heavy curtain closed around the four of them. Shuggy's legs went numb from the hard seat, but he knew better than to make a fuss. In the quiet, Agnes slowly sobered. She read the Freeman's catalogue to steady the shakes. She had been dog-earing certain pages, starting in early February, to get ready for the next school year in August. Shuggy stretching and growing like a weed. She refilled their mugs, slower now, and asked her mother,
How will you manage without him? For money and that?
Lizzie shrugged.
How have you managed?
Agnes glanced at her father.
I wouldn't like to say.
Lizzie let the boy doze against her. She lifted her arm and pulled him into her sight. She checked he was sleeping before she spoke again.
I need to tell you something, Agnes. I don't want you to pass remark on it. I couldn't bear it if you judged me.
Agnes sat forward.
What is it? Are you all right?
Lizzie shook her head.
I've been hard on you. I know I have.
Lizzie paused, as though she was waiting for Agnes to disagree, but Agnes did not disagree.
I was never a fan of Big Shug, but I was harder on you than I should have been.
It's okay. You were right to be hard.
No, I've been in your shoes. I suppose I just hope for better shoes for you.
Lizzie checked the sleeping boy again before beginning her tale. Shuggy had his eyes firmly closed, but he was not asleep. He listened very closely to what she said next. Lizzie took a deep breath and held it as long as she could before she spoke again.
Whatever it takes, Agnes, keep going. Even if it's not for you, even if it's just for them, keep going. That's what mammies do.
She'd been pulling a grey-headed mop over the tenement stairs, stopping her dance every so often to wring its head with her bare hands. The acid tang of bleach and pine resin nipped at her eyes as she chased dirty water from stair to stair and pushed the last little wave out of the close mouth. Lizzie dragged the heavy tin bucket into the street and poured the brackish water down the hill. Half-dressed wains jumped and danced over this new river, screaming with delight. She spent the rest of the morning washing sheets in Agnes's tin baby bath. She would never have admitted it, but she missed the steamy. She used to love the ritual of it. It was a place free of men, free of wains. A place where the women could share the bits of themselves that they couldn't talk about at chapel. She would pay her money, get her sink and put her curtains and work dresses in to steep in the deep boiling water. As the dirt loosened from the cloth, the women would stand around in a half circle and work the gossip into lather. Nothing happened in Germiston that the steamy didn't know about. Now, she knew, they were talking about her. Now they waited for her to finish on the ringers. They would say happy goodbyes. And when she was gone, they would pluck her good name to bits like a bit of old ham bone. As she choked the dirt from the clothes, great tides of water lapped over the side of the tin bath. She cursed at the mess, but at least she didn't have to wash his things anymore. At least she didn't have to wash for Willie Campbell. She couldn't imagine one of his granary overalls fitting in the little bath anyway. There would be no room for the water. Lizzie had been red-faced and thumping down into her laundry when she noticed Agnes twirling, her frilly white socks sucking up the pooling suds. Lizzie lifted her from the damp floor. She dropped the child in a kitchen chair and redid the velvet bow in her hair.
I suppose you're hungry again?
Lizzie's brow furrowed as she ran her fingers over the cabinet shelves. There was nothing there to eat. A handful of pockmarked potatoes, a stick of gritty lard, and a poke of flour that was so used up it looked like it might blow over from emptiness. She reached behind the empty bread bin, took an old box of soap flakes off the bottom shelf, and tipped it gently. Three hidden eggs rolled out of the box. They were brown and plump, with not a speckle on them. With a spoonful of lard, she cranked them into the black pan, and they rolled and spat luxuriously in the bubbling fat. She turned to Agnes and put her finger across her lips in a secretive way. The bairn looked up at her with fat cheeks, and she put her little pink finger across her bud of a mouth and made the motion back to her mammy. Agnes sat on Lizzie's knee, and they ate the hidden eggs from the same plate. The yolk was so deep and fatty that Lizzie could feel it coat her teeth, and she could see it gum together the child's lips. Happy and full, she dawdled Agnes on her knee for a while, listening to the wains play engines in the street, listening to the siren at Proven Gasworks call the men back to work. Lizzie wondered whether a man who was still walking back to the gas towers felt any shame. Any shame at all. She remembered how Willie had felt before the day he told her he couldn't take it anymore. It was a mild day. From the open window, Lizzie could hear the huddled concentration. Tiny, hushed voices and the whoops and shrieks when the little engine snuck up on the dim-witted cowboys. Then the tone changed suddenly. The wains were excited about something different. They were gasping and cheering now, and something was travelling up and down the street faster than it could ever be carried by foot. Many voices were sharing the same words, passing mouth to mouth like a rudimentary telegram. Lizzie moved discreetly behind her net curtains to catch a sly peek. All the other women were hanging shamefully out of open windows. Wains were shouting bits of news up at their mothers, and the women were turning around and sharing it with the darkened rooms behind them. There was a sudden knock at her door. Lizzie looked at Agnes. The child had a thick ring of yellow yolk around her mouth. She wiped it, hiding the evidence. She knew the door was not locked. It never was. This was a good close, full of papists. Whoever was outside now must be a stranger to her. Lizzie stopped at the hallway mirror and tried to push some life back into her hair. In her head, she ran down her list of debts, checking their good standing. She looked in on the empty shelves one more time in the scullery, and feeling fairly secure, she opened the front door. The greenish cobalt light that poured in through the landing window settled on him like a fine dust. The man said nothing. He was half smiling as he slipped a bag from his shoulder. A tall, heavy cotton bag, so full of things that it stood up on its own and nearly came to the bridge of her nose. She didn't know why she said it. Perhaps she could think of nothing else to say. That better not be full of dirty clothes. He laughed, and she had been grateful of that later. To only laugh at her, and not let her confusion steal the joy from the day.
Gonna come in?
He doffed his side cap. She had the sensation of not being able to place him, this stranger. His face was like a face she would see in the Royston Road, and she would return the half nod out of politeness instead of deep recognition. Still, Lizzie stepped backwards into her hallway, and the stranger stepped over the threshold. He dragged the heavy canvas bag behind him and closed the door. He was folding and unfolding his field cap when he saw the eyes looking at him from beside the table.
"Is that her?"
he asked. Lizzie could only nod. The last time he had seen her, she had been pink as a ham hock and wrapped in an embroidered blanket that Granny Campbell had handworked. Of course, there had been christening photos and Easter cards, but it was not the same. It seemed like this was the first time he had seen her with his own eyes. He drank in the thick ebony hair, the glass-green eyes, and best of all, the chubby legs. Well, he knelt, and he was crying. Slow rivulets of relief that she should be a happy-looking and healthy Wayne. He opened the mouth of his tall bag. Very gently, he took out a beautiful doll wrapped in hand-painted fabric. Brightly coloured wonders, one after the other, beaded ribbons from Africa and wee paper crosses from Italy. There were penny sweeties and striped wrappers and more dollies, all different colours and patterns. They had faces with skin colours and eye shapes Lizzie had never seen before. Everything Willie laid down in front of her, Agnes took up, till she was dropping things from the overflow in her arms. As Agnes leaned against his knee and turned the riches in her hands, he buried his nose in the crown of her hair and drank in the sweet, soapy freshness of her. As Willie knelt, Lizzie had been touching him gently, almost not touching him. The back of his neck was a syrupy brown like she had never seen. It was a colour of burnt sugar tablet, golden and sweet. She could see a little down the back of his shirt neck, and she could see how the line changed sharply from this dark burnt tan to a healthy golden tone. She had been gently considering a lock of hair that curled behind his ear. It was free of pomade and a horn brown colour so alive with the sun, so different from tip to root, that she didn't recognise it. She didn't recognise him. She wondered, where had the flat ebony gone that she knew and loved? She let the fine hair run through her fingers, and then she tugged it, hard. Willie looked up at her then. He closed one eye and smiled his lopsided grin. He was real. He was home. The papers had never said. She checked them every day, sometimes twice, sometimes 10 times. When she came back from the hospital, she would go to the shared cludgy in the back green and sit in the warm bowl and read the paper old Mr. Devlin would sometimes leave there. The papers had spoken of how the boys in North Africa had won a great victory. But they also told of the many sons from Glasgow, from Inverness and Edinburgh, who had sacrificed and would never be coming home. Lists and lists of names. Even the wee few streets of Germiston had lost that many. Every week it felt like families came with heavy heads out of the close mouths having been down at the chapel saying prayers for their lost sons. There'd been so many she had lost count. Mr. Goldie, young Davy Allen, the Cottrell brothers, who were only 22 and 23, and had left behind 7 fatherless children between them.